ma è... allora state ascoltando il Hard Yards. Buonasera a tutti.
The Hard Yards, passionate about sport.
It's gone to the short side. Oh, it's not gone to the short side. It's gone to the try line. Antonin Murray.
I don't think we met before, but I'm the referee on this field, not you.
Hi, Rob. Zeeb's here. Just want to discuss the captaincy next.
He's calling.
When Ringrose comes through, oh. That is brilliant from Ringrose. Ringrose is going here. What a score!
This is The Hard Yards. I'm Andy McGeady. We have a great show lined up for you today. James Downey and Pat McCarry are alongside me here in studio. And coming up in a little while, we're chatting to new Italian international Ian McKinley about his remarkable journey from Dublin to lining out for the Azzurri in recent weeks. But first, we are joined by former Munster player and current Iona attacking backs coach Mike Prendergast. Hello.
Andy, how are you doing? Are you well?
I am grand. James, did your paths cross with Mike early in your career? At Munster?
I don't know if I was there on trial for a while when you were there, Prendy.
I was in Borgwan at that time, yeah. I remember.
That's right. Already gone.
Cause I knew, yeah, because, yeah.
But it did cross there a couple of years back when I was doing the A's and
that's
you were
right,
with
yeah.
Under Rob
yeah.
Penny.
Yeah.
And yeah, absolutely.
So before we go into coaching over in Iona, there is some news this week where we have a confirmed that Mr. O'Gara, friend of the podcast, is going for a little sojourn in New Zealand. Mike, as part of the Irish coaching mafia in France, what's your view on this latest move?
It's a super move, I think. It's something, you know, when a franchise like that comes knocking, that you have to jump at it. I just think, you know, from his point of view, he's played in all the competitions this side of the world, and it's testimony to himself as well that a team from the Northern Hemisphere come knocking, and it doesn't happen too much, and especially somewhere like the Crusaders, you know. So it's going to be a massive experience both on and off the pitch, and I think Ronan has done it the right way as well. You know, he's came over to France, he's 4.5 years here now, he's building, as I always say about coaching, it's a marathon, it isn't a sprint. So he came in initially as a skills coach effectively and a kicking coach, and worked his way up to a defence coach. Now he's going to Crusaders as a backs, you know, stroke attack coach. So you know, his steps of progression are really, really impressive, and it's only going one way effectively, and that's going to be as a head coach. But he's touching on all bases, from coming in as a skills coach to, you know, I did it myself in Grenoble. It was a great place to come in, especially when you don't have the language, and you know, give him a time to settle in and see how it worked. And I know from talking to players, I've had players in Grenoble, and I've had players here in Ajax that have been under Raj up in Racing, and speak so highly of him, you know, both as a coach and both as a person as well, you know. So and I think the next step he's taken, and for his family, it'll be such a good experience. And and you know what, I bumped into Scott Robinson there in Lyon Airport coming back. He was obviously in Dublin, I was coming back, and he was saying to me that they're so excited to get him over, you know. So that's a nice thing to have coming from the head coach as well. So I think it's going to be great all around.
It's also nice, I think, Prendy, to see that we have a coach going the direction as opposed to us taking in Kiwis the whole time, and it's a nice little flip, isn't it? And it shows testament to Rod, you know.
Absolutely, because it doesn't happen much, you know. It's something that's I know you talk to most coaches this side of the world, would they like it? They'd love it. Some coaches went down for, you know, kind of shadowing for 2 or 3 weeks, but that's kind of the most you get. So it shows how much he's valued. And I know Dan Carter had spoke highly of Raj, so obviously he's a Crusader himself, and that would have went a long way. And apparently Greg Feek did as well, you know. So the people in the right places, and obviously Raj's coach Dan, so he knows exactly what he can bring, and you know, a guy like Dan Carter isn't going to talk someone up that he doesn't believe in, and obviously he's huge belief in Raj and what he can bring as a coach, but also as a person as well. And that's one thing I've noticed over here with the Racing boys that speak about him. You know, his man managing skills and everything are so good, because he's such a good down to earth bloke as well. You know, and that's a huge lot to do with him. And from himself, from a point of view, I suppose, looking forward, you know, as I said, this is the next step, going down as an attack coach, but going out to a culture like that, you know, and every team is looking for the right culture, but down there they have it. And I know that's something, speaking to him there over the last few days, that he's really looking forward to, you know.
So, Mike, I mean, you talk about steps there, and you've taken a couple of steps over in French rugby. Is that something that you want to explore, like coaching in, let's say, moving to England, or even doing a Southern Hemisphere for your job yourself?
Absolutely, if the opportunity comes up. I suppose, look, it's like anything, you can't beat experience. And one thing, you would have heard it as a player, you know, and you believe it, but as a coach, it's something that I'm massively believing, that you just can't beat experience. And that goes back to even my days in Young Munsters as a head coach, you know, just from a point of view when you're a young coach, and from a point of view of managing players. And, you know, every player is different, and most players like to be told things when they do something well, and they like to be congratulated. And, you know, it's how you get your point across when something they mightn't have done right, but you want to kind of keep it positive enough as well, because I suppose that was my first step in the coaching ladder. And then going on to Grenoble, as I said, as a skills coach, gave me a year, and then in his backs coach, attack coach. So those steps have been, I suppose, quite similar to Ronan's as well, in a way that you're just learning as you go along. And different environments. I had 4 years in Young Munsters, I had 4 years in Grenoble, my first year here in Oyonnax, and, you know, potentially maybe, who knows, go to England, or if something ever come up in the Southern Hemisphere. Absolutely, because for me it's a marathon, it isn't a sprint, and we're all learning every day as well.
So you touched on it there, James. There aren't a lot of available positions in the Irish coaching market that are filled by Irish coaches. What's your view on that?
I think people see a kind of a Kiwi, or hear a Kiwi accent and see a Kiwi CV or a Southern Hemisphere one, and they tend to go, oh, well, they're better, and you kind of invest. It happens across all sports. I think you look at, like, football in England as well. And even I was talking about one of the lads last night, and we're talking about, I think at one stage when Trapattoni was involved, I think maybe in most of the major sports that everyone was a foreign coach. Like, you know, and it's like, it's great to see someone like Rog, like Prendy, like Birch, like all these coaches out there now getting high level experience, and if they have to go away to get it, so be it. But to eventually come back, I'm sure, is you can correct me if I'm wrong, Prendy, but like, people always want to come back and to get that experience and come back and bring it back and bring something different and bring a different culture. And look, it's the way it's gone so far, and hopefully now we've got like Felix Jones and Jerry Flannery, and there's a lot of young coaches there who are holding their hand up now, which is great to see.
But you got Johan van Graan is in now for what, two and a half years, so that's another job locked up. Even if there is, like, there seems to be a bit of preparation in the longer term. But Mike, I mean, is that our assumption here? Is that, talking to you, an Irishman based in France, is that someday you want to get a gig at home?
I suppose, look, I'd be lying to say if I said no, I'd be lying. Yeah, absolutely. It's I suppose for me, in my career when I was at Munster, I spent a lot of time on the bench, so I suppose I wanted to a change and see could I get game time. So I moved away and went to Bourgoin for a season and Gloucester for a season, and unfortunately got back to Munster, which was a nice way to finish up. But I suppose having the experience of going away playing, it kind of gave me a taste of it as well, and it's something that I wanted to explore as a coach if the opportunity had come up. And unfortunately enough, it did with Grenoble, who gave me my opportunity. And you know what, there's one thing I say about coaching, especially in France. With us here, we've actually 14 different nationalities. We've 9 different nationalities in Grenoble. And you know what, it's from an experience point of view, it's huge, because, you know, you've guys with, you've Kiwis, you've Aussies, you've obviously French guys, Fijians, Romanians, everything. So you're actually, you know, you're getting exposed to so many different, I suppose, rugby cultures, rugby philosophies, and the way guys look at things from a rugby perspective, and I suppose it'd be the type of coach that would be quite open to listening and to ideas, and you know, when we're in the video room asking guys what's their opinion, and you know what, as I say, you throw that into the mix, and you obviously have your own philosophy, and you back that, but you do pick up little bits and pieces here and there from the different, I suppose, backgrounds of players. So from that point of view, that's, I suppose, the reason why I saw it as a player, and that's the reason as a coach that I did want to get away, because not get away, not that I had opportunities at home, but to try and find an opportunity. And believe me, I tried the whole world looking, and fortunately enough, something came up in France, and it's been it's been thoroughly enjoyable there so far.
Yeah, Mike, what is it? Yeah, talk about maybe coaches that might come through in the next couple of years. Your good friends with Paul O'Connell, is he seeing all this stuff with Rog maybe heading off to Super Rugby, and have you been talking to him about it? Does he have an itch to get back involved in it at all?
I have, I speak to Paul regularly, and he does some days, he doesn't other days. It's I suppose, look, he sees you know, as a player, how much time and effort he put into it, because I suppose he was the you know, when it comes to doing his job, he did so much, and he worked in his job, and it was 24 hours for him, whether it was on the pitch and as importantly and more probably off the pitch, he did, you know. So and he looks at, I suppose, coaching, it's you know, it's a long season, it takes up so much time, you know. So he sees that, he's done it for a number of years, he's got a young family now. I know by speaking to him, some days he's up for it, other days he's not so sure, but it'd be great to get him into the game. There's no doubt about it, because you know, when you speak to him about the game, he's approached it so intelligent, and he's had so many huge experiences. So the question, I suppose, he isn't 100% sure yet. I'm sure it's something he will be making, I'd imagine, soon enough. You know. Because I suppose you can't stay out of the game too long either, even though he has been helping out in the academy, but you know, if he's going to make the plunge, it's going to be soon, you know, whether it's at home or abroad, I'm not too sure, but it would be great to see him back involved, because you know, he's so much to offer to the game, and he's got so much respect all over the world, and you know, I suppose if he was to coach at home or abroad eventually, to get back, it'd be only good for Munster and Irish rugby, you know.
And what was he like? Because I know when you were at Grenoble that he came over and soaked it all in for a few days. What was he like on that trip? Was he as intense as ever?
Yeah, well, we were soaking things off him, I think, as well. No, he came over. It was more of a family break. Himself and Emily and the kids came over to us and stayed for almost 10 days. And he came in every day. And, you know, he just sat down with us, went through trainings, and just the way we play with the 2-4-2 system, which he was really, really interested in, because obviously he played under that, like James did with Rob Penny, and we just tweaked a few of the things, I suppose, from the way Rob had done it, you know, and he was very interested in that. And then he just, you know, the minute he came over, he had massive respect already gained by the players, and Paul is a very approachable, easy guy to get on with. So you know, the French players, all the different nationalities, we're going to just bounce some ideas off him, or just general chat, and you know, he fitted in very well and he enjoyed it, and I suppose probably got a good taste of it there. And then with Munster last year, with the academy and a few development games, you know, he's kept his hand in there. So I would imagine either within the next couple of months, I'm sure he's going to make that decision, you know. But no doubt, whatever decision Paul makes, it'll be the right one for him and for his family, you know. So
you mentioned 2-4-2 at Grenoble. What do you play at Oyna?
We play the same, we play the same over here.
And I was wondering, like, you guys have a 4G pitch. Is that something that you have differences as an attack coach in preparation when you're playing home or away? Because everything else is over there is grass, and Tom Simon's fairly heavy grass as well.
Yeah, not really. Just, I suppose, look, we obviously when we play at home, we train on that, and it's something, I suppose, that we're more used to, and we look to play a high tempo game with that kind of 2-4-2 system as well. It allows you to feel the field and have options, obviously midfield and on the edges, and try and, I suppose, pull defences. So you've less ability to get in, slow the ball down, or get turnovers, so you can keep that high tempo, you know. So, but yeah, for us, we try and use it as an advantage as well. But, you know, a lot of teams play over here. As I said, we're playing Clermont now this weekend, and you're looking for a high tempo. There's a team that bring high tempo week in, week out, you know. So, so we sometimes have to adapt our game on who we're playing and where we're playing. Like you said, if it's on our pitch or away, you know. So they're the kind of nice little intricate things that you have to try and change from week to week, especially in this competition, because a team like us, Ajax, I suppose we have to try and do things so much better than the other clubs to try and get a victory, because the competition is just getting stronger and stronger. You look at it now, you've traditionally your top teams, your Toulons, your Montpellier's, Clermont's, but now on top of that, you've the teams who, you know, are financially getting stronger, like Pau, La Rochelle, Lyon. Lyon are have huge recruitment for next year. They just signed Nakatasi there yesterday on a 5-year contract. So just becoming so much harder. And especially, I suppose, for a team like us, like Ajax, it's first year up. So we can't start effectively our recruitment till the end of the season. So our recruitment started very late. So, you know, I suppose the good French players are the players that snapped up first, because you got to get your French quota. And then when you go on the market, you know, a lot of your good foreign players are obviously are snapped up early, because England now market has become very strong as well, with their salary cap increase. So for a team like us, it's just about trying to stay in the competition. And the way it's gone kind of this year, as I said, your top six, now you've those three or four extra teams. So effectively, the way you're looking at it now, it's Ajax, Agen and Brive battling it out to stay in the competition. And the other 10, 11 teams are you know, battling to get into the top six. So kind of become that. So for us, we're trying to stay in the division, stabilise, and build from that. But it's very tough. Yeah, it's week in, week out. There's huge challenges.
So Clermont, nice easy one this weekend for you guys, and you know, you're in a dogfight down there. James, you've got some of Mike's old friends this weekend, Young Munsters.
Yeah. No, it's down to Limerick, down to the Cookies. So yeah, it should be an interesting weekend. Good research, by the way. Well done.
Thanks very much. I do try.
I should say well done, Alan. No, tough place to go. Tough place to go, as Prendy knows all about it. So, and Ian Keatley's involved down there as well. So changed the way they've played a little bit. So, yeah, tough side.
Yeah, Keats had an important part to play last weekend. That Fiji game turned into a little tighter than we thought, maybe beforehand and even during the first half. James, your view on that game, what did we learn?
First of all, when you make so many wholesale changes like that, it's very hard to actually establish things, as opposed to what I mean by that is, you have your frontline players, your Johnnies, your back rowers, certain players that you'd always have in the team. And to make so many changes, it's nearly like a trial match, so you're not going to get that stability that I think you'd normally have in a game. So there was always going to be disruption. I think this week would be very different. Maybe he might make a couple more changes to add to the South African team, a stronger South African side that we played. But look, I was pretty impressed. Like, you know, you're still beating a very talented side, you know, and with a team that have trained together for a couple of weeks. Albeit you're in camp and you are learning, it's still a very mixed team, you know.
The Joey Carberry show was fun while it lasted.
Absolutely. Look, he just showcases his talent there, and everyone knows it. And I guess they know it now. Everyone's confused about where should he play, and the debate's up now about is he going to stay in Leinster? What should he do? And
Is that a real debate?
Personally, I don't think so. I think Ross Burns there, absolutely, but Johnny Sexton plays how many games a year? There's a lot of game time available at 10. It's just a matter of where Ross Burns played well, so it's hard to drop him or hard to move him. And you want Joey on the field as well, and Rob Kearney's coming back, so there's going to be a lot of questions now as well of will he get his game of 15? But I think he's right to stay real, as he'll play with a strong side. If he goes somewhere else, is it going to be the right thing? I don't know. I'd like to see him stay raised and back his abilities, to be honest.
So when you were last in, we talked about what we wanted to see from the autumn tests. And then we saw everything we needed to see against South Africa. a couple of bright spots against Fiji, along with maybe some inaccuracies that maybe, as you say, is down to wholesale changes. What do we want to see from Argentina? Or, sorry, against Argentina?
I'd like to see a bit of a mix of that strong team that played against South Africa with a couple of changes in there. I'd like to see more in the second row. James Ryan in there, it'd be great to see him play. You know, I think he's a strong player there. Obviously I would love to see Joey involved at some point, but obviously he's not going to be there. And maybe a couple of changes. I think I've heard that Adam Byrne could be in, actually. I don't know if you know the path.
Yeah, well, let's talk about it, just because, let's say, if Conway started the two other games like that, if he could... Conway, of course, would be merited because he's brilliant in his first two games, but he could start on the bench because he can cover more positions from the bench, so that Byrne might get a chance. And like Schmidt told us after the game that this is his last window of experimentation, like, because it's all going to get serious after this. So I'd imagine he'll keep, you know, he'd keep a strong 12-13 players from that South Africa game, but then maybe just give lads a chance. This is your chance, and get them in with a few other guys who know the ropes, and see how they get on. So there'd be no harm if you've made one or two changes like that at all.
Mike, from your perspective over in France, what do you see when you look back at Ireland's performance so far in the autumn?
I thought they were very, very strong against South Africa. I just thought their fundamentals and their basics are so well done. You know, that was their first performance, that was their first game. It didn't look that way. You know, and even from last week, I just thought, you know, what Joe's trying to do, I suppose, is you know, you kind of know nearly you're 23, but with changes here and there. But you know, when you look at the young guys, for me, just from the outside looking back, I just these young players that are coming through, there's just so much talent there, and they're so confident looking. They don't look out of place. You know, obviously Joey Carvey goes without saying, but you know, you look at Ryan in the second row, as you said, Porter, Stockdale, somebody like Chris Farrell, who was with me here as well over in Grenoble. It's just so much talent. You know, when you look at some guys that can't even get into the squad, it's you know, there's such a depth chart there now for Joe to look at. And for me, from the outside, just as I said, looking back, there's huge excitement around the Irish rugby, and you know, as I said, your team or your squad, you can, you know, you won't be far out when, I suppose, three or four guys sit down and put it together. But now what you can do is, if there is injuries, by the looks of it, you can just bring players in, and it doesn't look like there's too much of a change, you know. And those young guys, as I said, their talent is one thing, but they just bring that enthusiasm as well, you know. So I mean, you look at, as I was going to say there, sorry, a guy like Rory Scannell, who's played extremely well over the last year or two, and couldn't even get in, you know. So that's the kind of depth that we're looking at in Irish rugby at the moment, and it's exciting, and the provinces are going strong, and we're starting to really start to produce young players full of energy and full of talent, which is great to see.
So Ireland hammered South Africa. South Africa, in fairness, didn't look good. That was part of that equation. But then, Mike, last week they turned over France. How did that go down?
Very poorly, actually, over here. There's a lot of pressure coming on Guy. Guy Novis has lost their last five. I watched the game. It was quite a poor game. South Africa were a small bit better than France, not much better. And that's why, I suppose, looking at the Irish result, because even the French boys had said it to me, you know, that, you know, you put 35 points over South Africa, and, you know, we can't beat them at home, you know. So, he has been given, Dean Ovis, from a point of view, has been given a small bit of a license to from Bernard Laporte to bring in young players. He's brought a few in, four or five, especially at half-back. Good players, maybe not, they don't have that experience at the moment, and it probably showed towards the end of the game when they need to finish it out. But, it didn't go down well here. So huge pressure to play in Japan this weekend in Ronan's new stadium, actually, in their new arena, Wrestling's new stadium. So probably a surface that might, there's that semi-artificial surface that's in, I think, Murrayfield. It might be something actually that could suit the Japanese, because they play with quite good tempo and stuff. So yeah, there's huge pressure to come in this weekend on Guy Novis and the French players, because, you know, when you look at the players and the talent they have, have to be beating a South African team like that at home. You know, it's non-negotiable, I think, you know. So,
so you're not calling the upset against Japan, no?
I think France will have too much. They're emotional, come out, they're emotional people, so I think they'll just have too much emotion this weekend, and it'll get them over the line, and Gael stay on, and that's where the French will carry on. So,
grand job. Right, Mr. Prendergast, thank you very much for joining us on The Hard Yards. Up next we talk to Ian McKinley about his long road from Dublin to Italy.
The Hard Yards, passionate about sport.
You're very welcome back to The Hard Yards. A man who you may have heard about in the sports news recently is Dubliner Ian McKinley. The former Leinster player lined out with Italy during their November internationals to round out what has been a remarkable journey for the 27-year-old. He joins us on the line now. Ian, hello.
Hello, how are you keeping?
We're not too bad. I don't know if the Gazzetta dello Sport carries talk of what's going on in the Irish media, but there's been a huge amount of talk about project players and the three-year rule in the last month, with, you know, Bundiaki being among them, etc. We don't often hear about it going the other way. So you're ex-Leinster, ex-Ireland under 20, and now you're an Italian international.
Yeah, well, I mean, first and foremost, I'm hugely proud and honoured to have been able and lucky enough to have been able to put on the jersey a couple of weeks ago against Fiji. So, you know, it was a fantastic feeling. And, yeah, I can understand the controversy that's going around. But I suppose my response would be that, you know, you can't blame the players. They're just there to play. If the opportunity is there, it's there. And I know certainly in my case, Italy has been there for me when I needed the most. They continue to support me, so we feel, you know, my performances hopefully on the field will repay that faith.
So let's go back, because there's going to be a segment of the people listening who actually don't really know the full story here. So I want to bring you back to 2009 first. So you're the starting out half on the Irish Junior World Championship team. Team's fairly stacked. Peter O'Mahony's the captain, Jack McGrath's playing, Reese Ruddock is playing, Dom Ryan, Ian Madigan. 2010, things aren't going quite so well. There's been an incident in a game. What exactly happened?
So I was basically playing a club game with UCD against Lansdowne, and basically a couple of minutes into the game was at the bottom of a ruck, and unfortunately a teammate just stood on my face, and unfortunately one of his studs perforated my left eye. So I knew it was pretty serious at the time, stood up and all I could see was black, and the UCD medical staff, who were fantastic and reacted really, really quickly at the time, they just said, listen, Ian, don't move. This is, you know, it's pretty serious, because the eye was sort of was hanging out. It wasn't exactly in the place it should have been, and was rushed to hospital in the Royal Ryanair in Dublin City Centre. And there I had an emergency surgery.
So what was the immediate impact then? Obviously, like it goes without saying, it's fear, I presume, an unknown.
Yeah, I mean, the operation was 4 hours long, so it was fairly brutal, as it was, you know, as described by my doctor. There was quite a lot of damage, so it was literally take hour by hour to see how it goes. And the operation was successful, but I had to stay a week in hospital and had drops put into my eye hourly through the day and night. Couldn't do any physical activity. And then after a week, I left hospital with a patch over my eye, and I was basically told you to stay indoors just in case any bits of dirt or anything flew into your eye. And with that, basically told a year of no physical activity, no running, no gym or anything like that, just because it could put too much pressure on the eye. But that was obviously a bit frustrating to hear. So, but luckily enough, you know, as the weeks progressed, my vision started to improve. I could start to see light again, which was a huge thing. And as I said, the visits to the hospital became less frequent, and I just constantly got better. And I was able to manage. I was able to get back onto the field, back playing with Leinster 6 months after the initial accident. So 6 months ahead of any scheduled return. So that was positive.
Yeah, but at that stage, there are no goggles.
No goggles whatsoever. No.
So what changed?
Well, in the sense, what changed? Well, my from that, I developed a cataract in the eye. I required two further operations, and then unfortunately, my retina detached 18 months after the initial accident, and that ended my career at 21. And apart from playing rugby, I always wanted to coach, and I got an opportunity to move over to Italy, where I started coaching in a town called Udine. And from then, basically in 2013, my brother came over, saw that I was a bit down. I wasn't really myself, and he thought, what can I do to help my brother? So basically, getting in contact with the right people, and speaking with World Rugby and Raleri, which is the company that now makes the goggles, they became available at the turn of 2014.
Okay, so this was the brothers McKinley finding a way to get you back on a field where you could feel safe with the remaining good eye.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, there was already an idea floating around with World Rugby, and as I said, Raleri. But basically, we managed, just through many meetings and sort of clashing of heads or whatever, the project was finally pushed into fruition, as I said, in 2014, and played my first game again then in March 2014 with the rugby goggles.
So there was a number of countries that signed up to the trial, but it was an opt-in process, as I understand it. So if a union, for example, the IRFU, hadn't opted into the trial, the goggles were not permitted to be worn in a game within that union, correct?
Yeah, so originally the World Rugby put out a proposal for these goggles, and unions had decided whether to enter into this trial or not. Italy were the first ones to enter, and at the time Ireland, England and France didn't sign up to the trial. But thankfully, as sort of my progression has gone up, playing up through the levels, those decisions have been changed, and I can fully partake in games all through Europe now, which is fantastic.
Yeah, you're now, the goggles are now not relevant in terms of where you can play against who and what ground. They're no longer relevant to your performance as a player.
Exactly. I mean, I've became the first person to play in Ireland, in Scotland, in Wales, in France, in England, in all these places with the goggles. So yeah, they're accepted. They're accepted everywhere now, which is fantastic.
Okay. Now I'm going to ask you what I hope is not rude, but it is a very honest question. How do you play rugby at 10 with one eye unavailable? That seems amazing to me, because we need both of our eyes to see our full range of vision. So have you learned to compensate, or is there certain things you've changed about how you play?
Yeah, I haven't changed a huge amount, but there's been a few adaptations, obviously. I won't give away everything, but there's been a few things. The example I usually use to everyone is that I can't see out of my left eye, and I'm left-footed, so sometimes when I put the ball out, I can't see the ball, so certain angles have had to change in terms of the kicking and that sort of thing. So, but you rely a lot on your instinct, and you rely a lot on team communication. So, it's second nature at this stage now.
Do you have players around you who would play differently beside you than, let's say, another out half in the game?
No, I don't think so. There's no. I mean, as you go up the levels, you have to play on instinct, of course, but you also follow a game plan that you've been given. But as I said, you try not to go away from what you've grown up with and what you know in your heart and your head, as it were. So I don't think many people. I try not to be different. I mean, in the sense that I just want people to see Ian McKinley is a rugby player with or without the goggles. Just want them, if you do something well, to say, okay, that's pretty good. If he does something wrong, well, that's not very good. Just want to be taken at face value and be a normal rugby player.
So there's a few things going right at the moment. There's obviously Conor O'Shea was brought in at the top of the Italian rugby tree. Michael Bradley's joined Sebre. But Italian club rugby has been going well in the Pro 14 and also in the Champions Cup. You almost pulled off one of the mighty wins against Toulon.
Yeah, I think that's the frustrating thing, is that it was almost, and you don't want to be known as the team that just competes. We're, you know, things are definitely going in the right direction here in Italy. There's a huge amount of talent, many talented players. It's just making sure that the correct avenue is there for them, almost, that the structure is in place for them, and you know, we're doing a lot better. A few results could have gone our way a bit more, but you know, we're constantly working, and we're hoping to put Italian rugby in a good place.
What do you think the next little step, when you're sitting there after beating a Toulon or after beating one, you know, a really big European win, what do you think that Treviso will have done differently? Is it player acquisition or something else?
No, I mean, not trying to, I suppose, dwell so much on that game, but it's, you know, there's so many different moments in rugby games that can change. You know, I think it was fairly evident in the England-Australia game recently at the weekend. You know, that game could have been so much closer than what is suggested by the scoreline. The margins are so small nowadays that it's just really, you know, very, very small moments can make a huge difference. And I think just on that occasion, that was for us a couple of key moments just towards the end. Fortunately lost us that game, but you know, with more experience of getting into those positions, I'm sure we'll come out on the right side of a result the next time.
Are you still doing any coaching?
No. Not at the minute, no. Doing like tiny bits and bobs, you know, if people ask me to help with kicking and that sort of thing, I'm more than free. Last year I did a little bit with an under-10s team, but nothing too major at the minute. But I have all my qualifications in coaching all done, so it's certainly something I will, you know, maybe explore in the future.
And I'm wondering about your experience with Conor O'Shea. Is he someone you've talked to a lot even before you made your debut?
I mean, before the debut, I suppose, just maybe a couple of times, you know, we'd see each other at training, but no, I'm very impressed, and he just wants to do what's right for Italian rugby, and like everyone around, you know, all the staff members, all the players. So no, it's been a good learning curve, and especially when you're in camp for 3 weeks, you get to know people, so it's been good to get to know everyone.
Has there been any surprises for you?
Any surprises?
Yeah, when you're in international camp, it's a different environment.
No, I think you sort of, you know, from speaking to some of my mates before who've been in camp and that sort of thing, you sort of know what's expected. So no, it's been enjoyable, different challenge, but certainly enjoyable, and hopefully we can cap off a good 3 weeks now with a good performance against South Africa.
Okay, good stuff. Ian McKinley, thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, no problem.
Murder, She Wrote is the perfect thing to watch during the day. You can watch the start, fall off for 40 minutes, come back, see the end, perfect. You know what I mean? You've missed nothing, really. Remember Raj Kev in the Killiney? He used to have to bring two TVs into the room, one for you for Cheltenham. Like every red-blooded male in the country, he'd be watching the horse racing, whereas I'd have a TV for myself for things like Murder, She Wrote and Houses Under the Hammer. Murder, She Wrote is the perfect thing to watch during the day.
You're listening to the Hard Yards Rugby Podcast on Sports Joe. Thanks for listening today. We're going to look ahead to some of the games coming up this weekend. Interesting weekend because we've got the test still going on, but the Pro 14 is back. So, first, to test rugby, Ireland-Argentina. Ireland are 15-point favourites. Oh. Yeah. So James is still with us, right? So Pat, usually this is head-to-head when it comes to the odds thing. So are we going to get a celebrity stand-in?
For me?
Yeah.
Yeah, if he wants, yeah.
James, do you want to take part on behalf of Mr. McCarry this week? And the score at the moment is 46-32 to me.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah, go on. Go for it, James. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, go on. So, go on. So, I'll get eye contact with Pat here now just to make sure.
All right, there we go. Right, Ireland-Argentina. Ireland 15-point favourites. So do you reckon Ireland can cover that? Or will Argentina... In fairness, they did well over in Italy. They got a good win out there.
15 points. I think Argentina will be within 15, yeah.
Yeah?
Mm, so
you're going the Ireland side of that? You're going the Argentina side.
Yeah.
I will go
Look at them fiddling
side.
Already.
Doing writing these things down. I'm very good at this. Scotland and Australia. Firstly, Jesus, Scotland, fair play. Almost did it.
Oh, yeah.
Ah, Stuart Hawk. Jesus, that would have been one of the all-time great moments.
Oh, stop. I know. Very frustrated individual after. But look, Scottish rugby is pretty on a high. And look, you see Finn Russell going as well. And
yeah.
A lot of quality players up there. And pretty much you're playing with three quarters maybe of the Glasgow team, and they're training week in, week out. And
there is something to be said for that, like that having that core, you know, just together. They know what each other's doing, and they're growing up together as well.
Yeah, but it's that when you're in camp, you can focus on other small intricacies that you don't need to actually do. Like, instead of, right, we need to get basics, combinations. Everyone knows it. Everyone knows what they're doing. Everyone knows things. They know Gregor now as well, and it seems to be a lot smoother. So
yeah, no, it's good. So it's unlucky, but so they're 5-point underdogs to Australia, who looked like a hammering. Wasn't really a hammering at Twickenham. Michael Checa wasn't happy with some of the calls. He either called him a fucking genius or a fucking cheat, depending on who you believe and how your lip reading is. But there's an investigation. We've had two statements. No,
4 days now it's been going on, this investigation.
Yeah. So anyway, I'll go first, and your stand-in can go after me, Pat. I will take the Australia side of this. I think they can beat Scotland by more than 5.
Okay. So in the last one, did you go Ireland? Did you?
I went Ireland on the last one. Okay. Yeah. I went against you.
Well, I'm leaning towards Scotland. Australia are going to have a performance on the back of a bit of a beating. Checo won't let them lie down. Scotland played well against the All Blacks. Can they repeat it? Yeah, I think they can. Yeah, I go Scotland.
Scotland, okay. Great. England, Samoa. England, 34-point favourites.
Yeah, probably rightly so. Samoans will, in my opinion, do their usual. Turn up, try and take the head off someone 25 minutes, half an hour. Give them more than that. And then I think England just have too much quality. Interested to see the England team. Is he going to change it around? Still think they have too much quality. 34 points. Yeah, I'll go with that, yeah.
Okay. 34 points is a lot of points.
Romania beat them last week, didn't they? So
yeah,
they're in the shit.
So where are you going there?
I'm going for a miracle.
Okay,
I'm going for Samoa. Oh, it's not a miracle. 34 points is a lot of points.
It's a lot of points. It is.
Yeah. So I'm gonna go for Samoa to finish inside that.
Okay.
Wales, New Zealand. Wales are 17-point underdogs here. New Zealand scraped the win in Murrayfield. Wales scraped the win against Georgia. I'm not happy about that scrum stuff, Pat.
No. Considering that they were the team that got done in by the French there in the Six Nations, and they were rightly complaining about it as well when France...
There was a lot of talk about honour and integrity from Wales after that.
Yeah, Howley was
rightly
banging
so.
Tables, yeah. And then they get the opportunity to, you know... they did get a yellow card, but then surely there was a prop that was in working order, if you can ever call a prop in full working order, on the bench. And surely they could have got someone back on and played it out, and they...
So for anyone who didn't see this, because in fairness, this was a low key game. Wales versus Georgia was
happening
not
be at the same time as other games.
It was. So at the very end of the game, Georgia are mincing Wales in the scrum, and it's been happening all day long. We've now into stoppage time. It's 13-6 to Wales. Georgia get a penalty about 5 yards off the Welsh line, and the Georgians don't think twice. They're like, yeah, scrum. It's the Welsh prop Thomas Francis gets a yellow card. He's gone. Both previous props have come off, but they haven't been come off for injury. It's not an injury replacement.
It's tactical.
The two lads are stripped off. Now, maybe it's warm inside the Millennium, but they're stripped off, and they kind of look as in, yeah, okay, which one of us is coming on, boss? And then no one comes on.
Yeah.
They don't come on. Instead, sub hooker comes on. It's uncontested scrums. There's a lot of confusion. The referee, some of the utterances, I think there was confusion about rules in France versus rules in the test arena. But that was a really bad look for rugby. It's not a nice way to end a game, especially when you're the team who's been done over there in France. And I don't know, it doesn't sit right with me. And I'm really surprised that. So I went to the disciplinary people in charge of the Autumn. I said, look, in light of this, the statement's gone on about Nicol Checa, is there anyone looking into the Wales thing? And they were very clear. They said there is no investigation and they don't see there being an investigation.
So they trust Wales to come up and say, like, it's almost their honour.
What do you do?
Integrity.
What's your investigation? You go to the player and you say, were you injured? And he says, yeah, cramped up.
Yeah.
You sure? Yep. End of investigation.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're calling the guys a liar and it's not like a break. Yeah. You know what I mean? So
you were talking about it on Twitter, though, weren't you, during the week?
I talked about a lot of things
with Neil Uncle Scrum Tracy about it. I think he had a good idea about it, didn't he?
There's a few people have come up with something along these same lines. And yeah, Neil Tracy called it out, which was, if this situation should happen where the defending team who's getting minced in the scrum loses a front row and then cannot field a competitive scrum, the other team should not be penalised for that.
Mm.
So Georgia were going to have a huge advantage having a scrum on the line, much more so than a tap penalty or kicking for the points was useless, or going for the line out. And so do you give the choice then to the other team, the attacking team, say, right, okay, we want you to keep that guy on because you want a contested scrum, we're going to take someone else off.
Oh yeah.
And you give them the choice or something like that, something where the game can continue and the team who's been offended against isn't penalised.
We'll
keep them honest.
Exactly. And even, okay, I'm just thinking here out loud, but if you had to bring someone in uncontested, then go, right, well, you're going to have to, we have to have an advantage somewhere. So if you're going to remove a back or something, or, you know, just there has to be an advantage somewhere.
And I don't think this needs to be over-engineered, but the principle is in place. And this isn't a new thing. Mm. You know, I remember she's playing J4, J5, and uncontested, they used to hate us because there'd be three back rows in the front row. And it was underhand, but there was also just getting a team out. But this is test rugby, shouldn't it? Anyway, look, rant over. We're not happy. Wales, New Zealand, 17 points. I think that New Zealand can cover 17 points. I think they can cover it handily.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with you on that one. I think we've gone against each other on three there, so to agree on one's not bad.
Grand. Right.
You've done well there. I feel we're going to have a good week.
Ganging up, that's all right. And the Pro 14 is back. So we got four games to the Irish provinces. Ulster at home to Treviso, 25-point favourites. I will go on Treviso on that, even though Italy are playing. I will go on Treviso.
Okay. Torn on this one. I'm trying to think. I'd go, 25 points is quite a lot.
Ulster have a good few injuries as well.
Ulster do, yeah. No,
hint in here.
Treviso. Thanks, Pat.
Treviso, right. Two on Treviso. Cardiff are 3-point favourites at home to Connacht.
Close on that one, I think. As obviously the bookies are saying as well. Connacht trying to think who they're missing. How many Cardiff? Pat, I'm looking for inspiration here. Cardiff are going to miss how many players at Wales, depending on home form.
I'd probably go Connacht on that one. What's the odds?
Three points.
3-point favourites, Cardiff. So Connacht 3-point.
Yeah, I'd go with Connacht on that one. But then I'm losing by 14 points.
Okay, I will go Cardiff on that. Leinster 20-point favourites against the Dragons.
Don't think they'll get 20. I'm going to go Dragons on that one.
Okay, I will go Leinster on that one. I will have faith in the Leinster second string. And Zebre are 14-point underdogs at home to a travelling Munster.
There's more to this as well. You've got like with Bradley there. Really have them pumped. Zebra have been playing decently at home, actually. 14 points, Munster. Okay, I'll go Zebra on that one.
Will you?
Yeah.
You sure?
Yeah.
Is Pat backing you up on that?
Doesn't matter what Pat. Have you looked at the weather in Parma?
It's cold rank. Says, I'm bigger than you, Pat. I will go Munster. Right, done. Right, a lot of games to look forward to this weekend. If you're a rugby fan, shut the door, strap yourselves in. We'll see how it all unfolds. Next, we have Twitter questions with James.
The Hard Yards, passionate about sport.
James is back to answer your fan questions. We put out a call this week, and these are the best ones we got in. Use the hashtag AskTHY on Twitter if you ever want to pose a question to our panel. First one. So the context for this one is the announcement from Northampton and Welsh Rugby that George North is returning to Wales, but we don't know who he's playing for. So yeah, that's the context. And the question is from the Black and Red, regular listener. Could the same happen in Ireland? The IRFU look to bring back, say, Madigan or Moore or somebody else and just leave the provinces to fight out who gets them, right? So is that something we could see happening where they actually do the deal first and then find the team afterwards?
I'm not sure. Okay, I can see how it works, but I don't know if it'd be a goer over here. Because ultimately, a province is going to fight for him. You want the player to actually want to play for the province, as opposed to, I still believe in there's an element of, you could have put Madigan to Munster perhaps before he left and went to Bristol. You could have put him somewhere else, you know. He didn't want to, so why would you force someone to do something they didn't want to do?
So let's say fast forward another season to the end of Madigan's contract, right, with Bristol. And the word is that, let's say, Bristol have signed, you know, two Johnny superstars, right? So the IRFU get in touch and say, do you want to come home? And Ian Madigan says, yeah, grand. Will you do this amount of money? And they say, yeah, we will. Who am I playing for? We don't know yet. Well, is that going to be weird? Is that going to be weird, you know, creating a competition and potential bad blood at home?
Well, yeah, I don't know if it's going to be bad blood, but especially I think if you're talking about Ian per se, every player is very unique and different. But Madigan was very kind of open in saying that he didn't want to play for Munster. So yeah. How would he turn that one around?
Might not go down well.
Correct, yeah. But that's just him, and he's had his opinion. Like, I know, like, Marty Moore is there as well. And look, there's a hell of a lot of players over there. And you could have used Tadhg Byrne as an example as well. That, well, we want him to snap him up and then we'll decide later on. I think you can take each case in its unique merit and divvy it out that way, or even speak to the player beforehand. Look, we don't necessarily have a position or a province exactly straight away to go, right, this is where it is. We want you to come home, but we want to get it signed and sealed before you go somewhere else. Are you happy to kind of wait, or would you be happy with going to two or three, or would you be happy with all four, or what, or would you not be happy? There could be something in that in terms of snapping them up before someone else signs them, but
that's the thing that does make sense. So that, you know, the word is perhaps out that Northampton are not interested in re-signing him at the same money, right? He's been out for a good few time, and maybe there's an element of game management. He's got an awful lot of miles in the clock for a young man. Wales, is it that they've looked to the Irish model and said, we can control him when we're at home?
Yeah, there's an element of that to it. I think if we're talking about frontline international players, as George is, who will start 9 times out of 10 for Wales, if we're going to do that with an Irish player who starts 9 times out of 10, fair enough. If we're talking about a player who's a squad player, perhaps, are you going to bend over backwards to do that, to make that happen? I don't know. But if it's one of our main players, so say if it was, we go back a few years to Johnny, and we had loads of players playing, and we had a foreign 10 playing Leinster, Johnny wants you home, but we need to sign him up before he goes elsewhere. That's a different question then, because it's a front line and you want to actually do the right thing by him, but you want to do the right thing by everyone, I suppose. But it's still,
it's the internal dynamics of this one fascinate me.
There's something about the Welsh setup that I always think is they do have the rivalry, but they don't seem to mind, and I don't think they're happy to go places. They're happy to go to your Ospreys. Like, literally, there's Ospreys, Dragons and Scarlet. So it's really...
But you can throw... The setup is fundamentally different geographically in Wales, in that you can throw a coat over the clubs.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're so close to each other. It's not the same as the natural north, south, east and west that we have in Ireland. And we shouldn't forget that. Mm. It's a different environment. Artificial is the wrong word, but some of the construct of the regions is also different. than it is at home. So look, we will see. We'll watch from the sideline, eating popcorn as this one plays out. Second question from David McCarthy. As I watch Irish rugby versus Fiji, I have to wonder why the Irish Wolfhounds don't get more games, maybe against lesser nations, and field new players and combinations. Place for the A side in rugby?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd love to. Like just one in November, even one in the Six Nations as well. Just to, you're under the eyes of someone. Like you'd have someone like a Farrell taking the reins of some young lads. You're in with the national team, but then you get a run out.
Do you mean Andy taking the team? Like, is it?
Yeah. And then it might be a good chance for him to kind of have a go at it, you know, as a head coach as well. And then you play the likes of a Tier 2 nation who I'd imagine would love a game like, you know, like a. You know, they'd love to play the proper Ireland side, but let's say if you're going to get on
Germany.
A Germany or a Romania or something like that and say, come on over, have a game, go out to somewhere like Tala Stadium or something like that.
Small stadium is key for these kind of things.
Or even Donnybrook or something like that. Why not really? Like, I suppose it's the, is it too costly? Is that why they don't do it these days? Or, you know, but... I'm all in favour of it.
Yeah, no, I'm a huge advocate of it, to be honest. I used to remember the Friday night lights in Donnybrook the night before a Six Nations, or whatever it was, Five Nations, Four Nations at the time.
Oh, you're not that old.
No, Five Nations. I was like, Four Nations now. But like Friday nights, you go to Donnybrook, watch it, and then the international's on the next day, and you see the A team. And I remember we were under 19s and Jeremy Staunton was playing with the 19s and then played an A game against Italy, and it's a great way to blood players. I completely agree with Pat on that, and it gets the lads together and just speeds things along. I think it is financial, unfortunately. It is financial, and then again, are they playing too many games, and all these questions come up and provinces won't release certain players. Look, you're going to have your problems down the line, but I'm a huge advocate. I think it's brilliant.
There's only a couple of windows per year when you think of the firstly, we have more players involved in the senior international squad now. Like, there's just more players called up and potentially involved, and then you've got more overlap with the league. There didn't used to be, like, Pro 14, there's extra overlap.
Games this weekend.
So you've only actually got probably the first weekend or maybe the second weekend of an autumn.
Yeah,
you know, and there's a window then in the spring as well.
And now this, like, ultimately it's going to be either two or three games each year if you're going to do the Six Nations, you know, so it's not that many. But then you've, the way they seem to do it now, depending on where they tour, they normally rest some players, some of the frontliners, and bring some of the other players along. And look, when I was doing the Wolfhounds, the tours, they were brilliant as well. So
yeah, there's a twinkle in your eye there.
There is. Nostalgic.
Right, so 1, 2, 3, all in favour at this table anyway. Right. Okay, so use a hashtag AskTHY on Twitter if you want to ask a question next week. Right, I have two competitions to read out here. Mm-hmm. I've got all my words here, James. We had a competition on Twitter for two tickets to Leinster's Guinness Pro 14 game against the... Were you listening?
Dragons,
yes, this weekend. The winner is Dave Fitz, 58, so enjoy that game. The Guinness Pro 14 final takes place in Aviva Stadium on May 26th. Tickets are available on Ticketmaster. And if you were listening to the podcast last week, you will have heard Pat's chat with Lions captain Sam Warburton, and he is a DVD enthusiast. We asked you how many times Sam said the word DVD, and thank you for all the entries. We actually got a fair few. The correct answer was 8, and well done to Shane Madigan. And Pat, the DVD is in the post today.
It's winging its way in the post this morning, so traffic is pretty light in Dublin, isn't it, this morning?
James is giving you daggers for that statement. That's it for this week. Thanks to James, Mike, Pat and Ian McKinley. Alan McNan for producing, and Paul Donegan was on sound. We'll be back next Thursday with a new podcast. Subscribe to it on iTunes, Podcast Republic, SoundCloud and every good podcast app to get it straight to your phone. I'm Andy McGeady. This has been The Hard Yards. We'll talk to you next week.
The Hard Yards. Passionate about sport.